Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Wendy Wilson will be joining us here for the first segment of the program today, but first let's take a look at gold and silver. Still pressure on gold down 970 at 1108.50. Silver's down 20. At 1516, platinum down 8 at 958. Palladium is also down 15 at 633. The USDX today, of course, is strong, 0.70, almost at 98, 97.93. That's been a bull lately. And crude oil down, took back yesterday's gain, 141 at 46.49. And the paper markets today, we're weak most of the day, and you're looking at the Dow. Oh, come on here, little Miss Computer. Oh, here we go. Down 49 points at 17,868. The NASDAQ was down 3 at 51.42. The S&P is down 7, 21.03. 10-year yield, 2.23%, up 0.01. Euro dropped, of course, almost a full point. 109, and pressure on Germany's down about 1%, and just little changes everywhere else in the Asian and London markets. Well, I'd like to welcome Wendy Wilson to the program today. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought
we. What are we going to learn about today?
Well, I thought we'd talk about what our nails can indicate as far as probably a health problem. A lot of people just don't think about looking at their fingernails or toenails to let them know there could be a serious problem brewing. So forget the palm reading. You should check your nails to see if you have any serious health problems. And just like your blood and your urine and your hair analysis can offer some clues into your health, so can your finger and toenails indicate that you may have some health issues. So nails are really skin cells, and they like to breathe. So ladies out there wearing a lot of nail polish and the fake nails, actually that can suffocate a nail bed, especially, you know, down near the cuticle, and that can make your nails vulnerable to a fungus infection. So we're going to take a look at some of the health conditions and indications our nails can give us. As I read this, you're probably going to be checking out your fingernails. According to medical science, there's about 30 different health conditions that can be spotted by looking at your fingernails. For instance, your nails could signal that you maybe have a heart, a kidney, or a cancer problem. So if you have pulmonary or heart conditions such as emphysema, it could show up in your nails. The problem is you could have tissue beneath your nails that can become thick and force the nail to club around the end of the finger, making it look bulbous. So actually, I had a family member back in the 70s that had fingernails that looked like that, and that person did have emphysema. When the nail grows and clubs around the fingernail, they call that clubbing. So if you ever see that, that's what that is. So nails actually can develop strange lines or dents in them, not due to trauma. So a good indicator what's going on inside your body could be what's known as pitting on your nails. This is where you get these little dent marks in your fingernails. You could have nutritional deficiencies according to science, or even have some sort of low toxin poisoning going on. So if your nails display small surface dents, not due to trauma, it could be a sign that you have some skin problems, like maybe eczema, psoriasis, or even skin cancer. So the pitting of the nail can also be due to arthritis conditions. So now if you see parallel lines, which can appear white or black, this can indicate a serious health condition. White parallel lines, it's known as Myrick's lines, and it's likely because of a low protein in the blood system. It really indicates a malnutrition issue. And when that happens, the liver can be affected and be in distress. Now, dark lines can indicate skin cancer, but this is weird. It usually only shows up on one fingernail, so usually the pinky. So check that out if you got a dark line that's on your nail there. So if the nails have any brown or red streaks, it could indicate a number of conditions, including a heart valve infection. So nail lines or grooves going across the nail from left to right, that's not from trauma. That could be a sign of extreme stress known as Bue's lines. Have you ever seen that, Melanie, Al?
I can't say that I have, no. I remember when we were kids, they told us something about little white lines in our nails.
Right. Well, and another thing is if you get those little wavy lines that go horizontally across the nails, a lot of times that's people that are taking way too much synthetic supplements, okay, which are made from petrochemicals. So your nails will indicate there. That's what it is. Now, there are some different shapes and colors. Also, the fingernails can have different shapes to them. Shapes that go outside the normal are the ones you should be concerned about. So, for instance, if the nail develops a spoon shape, which they raise up on the sides and in the front, and the nail looks like a spoon instead of it curving nicely down, this is called oilovicia. And it's often a sign the person has lupus. So when the nails become discolored, it could also indicate a medical condition. Aside from trauma, yellow nails can actually indicate lung conditions like tuberculosis. Also brown, if your nails look a little brownish, that could be associated with either a thyroid condition or pregnancy. And there's also a condition where the nail can be half white and half a darker color, and that indicates renal failure. So medicine thinks the impurities in the blood from the kidneys that are failing changes the pigment underneath the nail bed. Now, there are some drugs and foods and things that can affect the health of your nails and your overall health. If you have red nails, not due to nail polish now, this could indicate that you have too many fatty acids, like cholesterol, in your diet. You're consuming too much sugar, salt, and dairy. And most often the liver is not functioning well if that happens, and you may have even some blocked arteries. The nails that turn purple, aside from, you know, hitting them with a hammer trauma, it could suggest the digestive system is off, or you have too much sugar and not enough fruits and vegetables in the diet. And there are some pharmaceutical drugs, like chemotherapy drugs, that can turn your nails purple, as well as blood pressure medicines, medicines for headaches, acetaminophen, and cocaine can also turn your nails purple, like you're not getting enough oxygen. All right. There's also the detached nail situation. Sometimes trauma, you know, if you hit your fingernail, it could loosen up the nail. But if it's not due to trauma and your nails are loose, it could be due to a circulation problem called Raynaud's phenomenon. It's kind of a unique circulation issue where only certain areas of the body seem to have blood flow disruption. And another reason for loose nails is you could have a prescription to a medication that's causing it, or you have an overactive thyroid. Okay, so the skin that supports the nail underneath the nail fold can become red and inflamed, and this can lead to infection and irritation. And also, some people have a problem with ingrown toenails. That's a pretty significant issue. And people go to the podiatrist for help with that. Anybody here on the radio today have ingrown nails?
Not that I know about.
No, I used to have them as a kid because I did a lot of ballet. And they're not fun. The nails grow in a curve right around the edges and dig into the skin. The skin can get inflamed, and you have to go and have those trimmed away. Now, there is a procedure now that podiatrists often recommend if you tend to get recurring ingrown nails. It's a procedure where they take and destroy part of the nail root, attempting to prevent it from growing in a curved position. So they do that at the nail bed. However, this often leaves the nail bed vulnerable to a fungus infection. And if that happens, the nail will yellow and become thick and irregular at the nail tip. And as the infection moves forward down further into the nail, to the base of the nail will raise up off of the toe and be only attached at the nail bed. And this makes the nail very tender, and any pressure is painful. And if you try to trim the nail, what happens is the nail crumbles and breaks off. So if you don't correct the fungus condition, it takes about 12 months for a nail to grow fully out, but what happens is it falls off. And then another fungus-infected nail replaces it, but you got to correct that because eventually the nail will not grow back in. So, and of course, there's lots of drugs and surgeries and stuff that they offer now, but all of them for nail fungus have extreme risks. I encourage people to do their homework. For instance, they have drugs, surgery, and lasers in an attempt to correct any extensive nail fungus issue. But the surgery is temporary, the lasers may not work, only in a small percentage of the cases, and the drugs can actually harm your liver, and you have to do blood analysis every 3 months to check your liver enzymes. What I prefer to do is use some straight up garlic juice, because it's antifungal. Is super antifungal, and it may take a year to correct the problem, but it's, you know, non-toxic, it's inexpensive, there's no side effects, it's painless, and it's lasting, the correction is lasting. So what you do is get some garlic juice, and you would drip it so it goes underneath the nail, but then also put some on the top at the nail bed, massage that in, and do that every night, and do that until it corrects. What you notice is the nail feels more secure, it's not as loose and as tender. And then the color improves, and then it starts to flatten out and look normal. So straight-up garlic juice for nail fungus, folks. That's what I say.
When I was a kid, and I can remember this, back might have been 6th grade, 7th grade at the latest, might even been 5th grade, I don't recall. But a friend of mine looked at my nails, and he said, "What? You don't have any moons."
Oh.
All right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean by moons?
Yeah, I do. Uh-huh.
Well, why don't you go ahead and explain that and see if that's similar to what I was told back, you know, by a friend of mine back in sixth grade.
Yeah,
or something.
At the cuticle, at the nail bed where the cuticle is, there's usually a different pigment coloration. It's a lighter pink than what grows out from there to the end of the nail tip where your nail grows out, and it may be white. So, some people don't have those. I've noticed that on people.
I looked into it, I can remember years ago, and it indicated, and he thought it was a positive thing, all right, everybody in his family had them, and he thought it was a positive thing, and I looked into it at some point in my life, and the research I saw maybe it was accurate, maybe it wasn't, indicated that it was evidence of a mineral deficiency, and magnesium is the mineral that I want to say, but that might not be what it was. It might have been some other mineral. And if you were more deficient in that mineral, you had bigger moons on your fingernails. And I've never had them to speak of. I got just barely a trace of them on my thumbs, but not on the other four fingers of each hand. Never had them. So I was just curious if that was something you knew about or you'd heard about or whatever.
Did we lose her?
I don't know. I'm still here and you're still here. Appears that...
She didn't want to answer your question, Al.
Well, I guess not. She could have just said, no, I don't want to answer that question. She didn't have to. It must be some sort of a technical problem, which means who's responsible? Frank, the producer.
Let's go ahead.
Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. You can call Wendy for further information at 866-229-3663. Again,
hey, Al, are you there?
Yeah, we are now. Where'd you go, Wendy?
I don't know where I went. I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me. I'm sorry. I heard you talking about the moons and a mineral deficiency.
Yeah, that's what I came to. I looked it up maybe when eighth grade or something like that. You know, I mean, it's 50 years ago or more. Yeah, more than that, close to 60 probably. Looked it up, and I can remember that according to what I read at the time, the moons were evidence of some sort of a mineral deficiency, and I don't recall which mineral. I thought in the back of my mind it seems like maybe it was magnesium, and what I read was the bigger the moon, the more deficient the mineral you were. And
wow.
Insofar as I didn't have any moons, I was not deficient. It was good news for me, but a long time ago, and I don't know if it's good news. I don't know if it's accurate information.
That is just real interesting stuff, I think. You know, our body tells us, you know, a lot of things we should know if we just take a look at it and pay attention, you know?
It is surprising. For example, you were talking about one of the diseases that were indicated only shows up in your pinky finger, in the nail of your pinky finger.
Well, most typically it's on the pinky, not always, but typically
okay.
It is, and that's that that parallel line that's a dark color, like black. It could indicate, you know, skin problem, could even be skin cancer. So if you got any moles out there and you've been wondering about it and you check your nail and you got a black line showing up on one, hey, I'd go check that out, you know.
Pretty interesting. Do you think this is anything like, does this correspond at all to the idea of acupuncture? Now, I know you don't do acupuncture on the nails, but what I'm getting to is the idea behind acupuncture is there are places on your body where you poke a needle and it has an effect. You poke a needle in your arm and it has an effect on your liver or your spleen or whatever. Is this similar to that same concept?
Well, I don't think it's a pressure point. I think it's just a manifestation
of... No, I know
it's
not the same thing, but it's still strange.
An
connection.
Indicator, yeah. I think it could be like, you know, an indicator, almost like a pressure valve and letting you know that there's something that needs adjusting. Reflexology is similar to acupuncture. It's just, you know, pressure points on your feet because they say all your nerve endings from your organs end in your feet. So if you massage certain areas of your feet, you can stimulate your organs and improve them. So I just know a foot massage feels really good.
All right. Wendy, why don't you give us some contact information?
Sure. We specialize in immune boosting and organ cleansing, so flu season's here, so if you want to boost your immune system or cleanse away toxins to strengthen yourself, that's what we do. Apothecary Herbs, thepowerherbs.com is the website, or give us a call. We'll send a free catalog at 866-229-3663. We did get a new shipment of catalogs in, 866-229-3663. Thank you, guys. Talk to you later.
All right, Wendy, thank you. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. For all your gold and silver coin needs, give Melody a call at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to remind the listeners that, when we see prices of gold fall as we have, and we've certainly seen it drop in the past, week and a half, significantly. When you buy the fractional pieces, what's nice about it is they don't adjust as quickly as your 1 ounce coins do. Number one, it's because they're fractional. And so you have to have really large moves in gold in order to see any significant changes in the price of the fractional pieces. The AU $5 Liberty gold pieces are on their own. They're selling at $350. We have them available to you, AU $5 Liberty gold pieces. They're beautiful coins, small fractional pieces, $350, and we're going to include your shipping cost in that. So great little coin to be picked up. Peter Piper picked up Pickle Pepper. It's a great coin to pick up, to purchase, to add to your portfolio for any of your fractional needs that I think we'll face in the very near future. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
Got an article here from CNBC.
Oh. Well, that's fairly lengthy. Let me go ahead and I just want to recap Kraft Heinz. They're going to be closing 7 factories that will be downsizing, and they're going to shed 2,600 jobs. Those 7 factories are located in the U.S. and Canada. This is a 2-year project, and they're going to be closing their manufacturing facilities in Fullerton and San Leandro, California. Federalsburg in Maryland, St. Mary's, Ontario, Canada, Campbell, New York, Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, and Madison, Wisconsin. And again, this is going to happen to the next 12 to 24 months. They also have a meat processing plant in Davenport, Iowa, that they're looking to close and move production, although they are building a plant that's several miles away. So
we're talking about Kraft Foods right now. True?
Well, no, there was a merger of Kraft Heinz, and this is what happens when you have these big, you know, corporations that merge, and, you know, jobs are going to be lost. They will be cost-cutting, and Alcoa. Senator Charles Schumer, he was outraged and disappointed because Alcoa is planning to shut down some smelting operations at its northern New York plants, putting about 500 people out of work, and he was not informed. So he was very upset that Alcoa made the announcement. They actually made the announcement on Monday, and that they're going to shut down two smelters. I want to say schmelters, but smelters in Washington State, in one in Messina on the St. Lawrence River. So, again, with the total, you're looking at about 800 layoffs, excuse me, about 500 in Messina. And they're also going to lay off about 135 at a plant in Point Comfort, Texas. They're curtailing money-losing smelting and refining capacity to ensure continued competitiveness was why they are closing these plants. We have mentioned a lot of huge layoffs from these larger companies. Caterpillar, there's a slew of them. Banks, Deutsche Bank was going to lay off thousands and thousands of people. Wait till these numbers begin to hit the reports. And so it's going to be very interesting. So you're going to have the Fed wanting to raise rates, you know, on their great 5% numbers
unemployment.
On their unemployment. But yet here in the next year, you're going to see that number, I believe, increase unless you have more and more fall off. I had also wanted to mention about the European Central Bank. They said that the bank's finances are smaller than first feared. And they announced this figure as a result of an ECB review of Greece's four main banks following an agreement on their third bailout. They need 14.4 billion euros in fresh money to get back on their feet. But what's interesting about this, as I mentioned it to you during the breakout, no one talks about that the people, customers of their four main banks are still have restrictions on withdrawals and transfers, that, you know, people can't do their business because of this in Greece. So not a lot of discussions on how those people are still struggling to recover, but yet we all know that, of course, the politicians and the bankers and, you know, all those that are involved, they all got their money. And but yet,
I don't even know if they all got their money, but they didn't.
Well, they all got something.
They wanted.
They all got something.
Yeah, they got something. But
and I really don't care about them. I'm thinking about the people. Of course, you know, everybody can point a finger at who's to blame, but the people are just pushed, shoved underneath the rug, brushed underneath the rug, and no one talks about how these banks are still on restrictions, that they're still continuing to. Keep withdrawals and transfers on limits.
Why do you suppose they're still struggling?
Well, what's your idea?
Well, the idea is simple. They can't pay the debts.
Simple. I know.
That's it. They're bankrupt. That's the reality of this thing. The whole idea of what we've seen in the Greek drama throughout most of this past year has been to avoid the fundamental truth that Greece is broke. That's all. And they're trying to maintain some sort of illusion that Greece is still solvent, and they're trying to get people to pretend to pay the bills, and they can't, and they can't get money out of their own banks. And the problem, you know, we've said this months ago. The solution to the problem is just say, that's it, we're bankrupt, can't pay, zero it all out, we're going to go through a difficult 12, 18 months, and we'll be back on our feet, probably like Iceland, within 2 years. As it is, they are going to go through a kind of purgatory, if not hell, while they struggle to do what they can't do. They don't. What can't be paid won't be paid. They don't have the money. That's it. Yes. And every bit of this is about trying to create the illusion that Greece is not bankrupt when, in fact, Greece is broke. It's bankrupt, doesn't have the money, can't pay, therefore it won't pay. And all the rest of this drama is just a fiction to avoid facing that truth.
And that's exactly where we were at before they pushed through a two-year budget at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, 144 pages that you know no one read, mm-hmm. that they just pushed it through, and we were the same brink that Greece is at. They made the illusion. It created another illusion, but that day of reckoning is coming where they won't be able to push it under the rug because we are a country that's bankrupt.
Yeah,
we are a country that can't pay our bills.
For a long time. Not just recently. Technically, we haven't paid our bills since, at least our international bills, we haven't paid them since Nixon closed the gold window and stopped redeeming foreign-held dollars with gold. We haven't paid any of our debts, technically, since 1971. This isn't a new phenomenon, but these economies, especially large and huge economies like our own, it's like a ship at sea. Once that thing gets moving, it has a lot of momentum. And even if you turn the engines off or you reverse the propellers or you turn to port or starboard, that thing doesn't turn on a dime. You got to go miles before you can turn around and head in the other direction. There is a momentum that carries you along despite the reality maybe the engine room blew up. The ship is still moving forward, carried by momentum. That's basically what's happened in this economy over the last 40 years. The momentum has carried us forward, but we're reaching a point. You know, again, our government, we talked about this in the last few days, the evidence that the government is broke is the national debt. Why do we have a national debt? Because the government has to borrow to pay its bills. That's why. If we had the national debt, if it was temporary, if we had a bad situation, Hurricane Katrina hit, and said, oh my gosh, we've got to raise extra money. We didn't anticipate this emergency. We've got to raise extra money. We've got to go into debt in order to help the people in Louisiana. Okay, you generate a deficit there for a year, maybe even 2 years, but within a relatively short period of time, you pay it off and you get back to where you don't owe any money. We don't pay our debts off. Not in total. We just keep on adding and adding and adding and adding. And this persistent adding is persistent evidence that we can't, or our government can't pay its bills. And that is evidence that the government is technically bankrupt. Right? If you can't pay all your bills, what do you need to put you in an involuntary bankruptcy? Three creditors have to show up and say, I want the money, and you say, I don't have it. Another one shows up, asks for the money. I don't have it. Another one shows up. Three of them take you into court. The court will put you into an involuntary bankruptcy because you have three creditors you haven't been able to pay. Our government has been able to avoid that. Legally and politically, it hasn't been possible for three creditors to stand up and put the government into an involuntary bankruptcy, but technically, that's where it is. And sooner or later, that's going to be recognized. And when it is recognized, the vulnerable point, as far as I'm able to understand right now, is the idea that the government can't pay its bills, and therefore, it must borrow more money. This was the significance of the increase the debt ceiling legislation that passed in the last week. All right? They have to be able to borrow more money. 18 trillion is not enough. We've got to go to 19, 20 trillion, wherever it has to be. They have to borrow more money to maintain the illusion. This is a wonderful situation unless you run out of lenders. If there are people just finally say, I think you're bankrupt and I'm not lending you any more money. When we hit that point, what's the government going to say? And we already have in the private sector, and that probably 5 years ago, where they had an auction for U.S. treasuries, and the government put them up, and nobody bid on them at full face value. And they began to realize, oh my gosh, we're going to have to reduce the price of these bonds by, who knows, 20, 30, 40% before any of the private investors will enter a bid on them. And they didn't want to do that and establish that the bonds had lost 10, 20, 30% of their value. And rather than make that admission by allowing the auction to continue, they terminated the auction. And shortly after that, that's when the Federal Reserve started buying the U.S., being the principal buyer of U.S. bonds. Federal Reserve stepped in and said, we'll buy your phony baloney bonds. We believe in you. We don't think you're bankrupt. They know very well we're bankrupt. And I think it's part of the reason the Federal Reserve stopped quantitative easing three. I think they've reached a point where they don't want to lend any more money, to any more currency to the federal government. They know they're not going to get paid back. Give us some more U.S. bonds. They're not going to work. Right? I think that's why the Federal Reserve, I could be wrong, but I think that's at least one of the reasons why they sat back and they said, we're not lending any more money. We're ending quantitative easing three. I think it's, if I'm right, there won't be a quantitative easing four. A lot of people have been predicting, well, quantitative easing, QE to infinity. I don't think so. I think the Federal Reserve is so deep in the hole right now, they know they're never going to get out. They owe $4.5 trillion. They've got $4.5 trillion worth of debt. At least $3.5-4 trillion is U.S. bonds. They're never going to get anything back for them. They're in trouble. I know it's all paper entries and digital entries and the rest of that, but they've got a mathematical problem that they will not easily overcome. And if I'm correct, maybe I'm not, but if I'm correct, it means the government can't get much more money out of the private sector. Some people will still lend money to government, but not to the degree that was true 5 years ago. And if the private sector won't lend money to the federal government, and if the Federal Reserve won't lend money or can't lend money to the federal government, then how are they going to continue to go deeper into debt, right, in order to borrow more in order to pay the existing bills? If their line of credit gets cut off and they can't borrow more, how are they going to support Social Security and entitlements and the national defense? They're already facing cutbacks. You read the newspapers, you see it almost every day. Something's being cut back. All right, the government is cutting back here, there, wherever. It's all evidence that they're broke. We are not Greece, but we are much like Greece, and we may be worse off than Greece, although it may not show up for who knows. You know, Greece has had its problems and is having its problems. And more than likely, we're going to do something similar in this country. The question is, will we also play this little game of pretending that we can pay off the debt when, in fact, never going to happen?
And people have to understand, just because it looks like the stock markets are hitting these numbers, and that's what we're going to talk about probably after the next break, even though these numbers at the stock market, the Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ are showing these high numbers, things just didn't go away because they extended the budget for 2 years. These problems just increased in size. Mm-hmm. And that to me is what's shocking, is they do this and yet everything just seems to go right along with their little plan. You can never underestimate their power and their abilities to keep this illusion going through the means that they have. And so people see the higher stock markets and they feel comfortable. They feel that, well, things must be okay. Well, they're not.
Yeah, I understand.
And don't get caught up in that. It's a very serious situation because that's what happens to people. They look at these signs and they feel that, well, you know, maybe I'm not doing as well as everybody else, and they don't do what they need to do, and they sit back and they don't pay attention.
They are not responding to objective reality with rational decisions, and we're going to talk more about that when we come back. One of the things we'll try to get to is the concept of the money illusion. This is a phenomenon that's recognized by economists, the American people. I've never heard of it until today. I've talked about it in my own way. I've sensed it and I've talked about it, but I've never heard. Economists have recognized it all the way. It goes back to 1928, the first time they talked about the money illusion. We will talk about that and how people they are susceptible to the illusion rather than reality. And insofar as that's true, they do things that are irrational. We'll talk about it when we return on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're going to go ahead and we're going to be talking about the what you had wanted to talk about.
All right. If we want to go to that, you had something else I thought. But if we want to go to the money illusion, here's something that I just stumbled onto this concept. We've talked about this just in the last day or two, although I didn't understand this term. I'd never heard of it before. Right. And I'm going to be reading in part from Wikipedia. You can look this up yourself on the internet. The concept money illusion. You can find it on Wikipedia, as it turns out. And when I've talked about it, I've tried to explore the idea that while the price of gold, we talked about this a couple of days ago, had fallen 15 points, had fallen 15%, the value of dollars was up by 21%.
We've talked about it on the U.S. dollar.
Well, I get that. We touch on it from time to time, but we haven't. I mean,
just
the last day or two we talked about it. All right? And the point I was groping to explain was the idea that because, although the price of gold as of yesterday or thereabouts was down 14%, I think it's 15% right now, over the course of the last year or so, during the same period of time, the value of the dollar is up 22%. All right? The point being is you subtract the one from the other, and it turns out, even though the nominal price of gold has fallen, the purchasing power, the real value of gold, has risen by 6-7% over the course of the last year. All right? That's the implication. And I know that's a peculiar argument, the sort of thing the average person says, well, I think that's just contrived. But it turns out that economists know exactly what I'm talking about. Here's the Wikipedia article. They say in economics, money illusion or price illusion refers to the tendency of people to think of currency in nominal rather than real terms. What do they mean by that? They mean, in other words, the numerical face value, the nominal value of money is mistaken for its purchasing power, which is its real value. All right? Now, this is a false way of looking at things, again, as modern fiat currencies have no intrinsic value, and their real value is derived, its derivative, from all the underlying value systems in an economy. And they list sound government, sound economics, sound education, sound legal system, sound defense. These are the underlying value systems in an economy, according to this article. Now, just sound government is one of them. How many of you think we have sound government right now? How about sound economics? You think we have sound economics? According to this Wikipedia article, that's one of the foundations for the value, the perceived value of our currency. How about sound education? How many of you are proud of the American education system? How about the sound legal system? Justice will be done though the heavens fall? Bunk. Money will be made, all right, though the heavens fall. That's the attitude. Point I'm making. We don't have, according, even by the terms presented in this article, we don't have good reason to believe and have confidence in the nominal value of money. But the article is talking about the difference between the numerical face value. The nominal value of money is mistaken for its purchasing power. This is the same argument that I've been trying to understand myself and explain on the program when we talk about gold is at a particular price. And people say, oh my gosh, the price of gold has fallen. And it's all, this money illusion is about people only get price. All right, they get it. They understand the nominal price. They do not understand purchasing power. And they're telling us, here they're telling us, purchasing power, that's the real value. Purchasing power of gold is up 6-7% in the last 12-15 months. Price, nominal price, is down, right? But the purchasing power is up as measured in dollars. The term was coined by Irving Fisher in Stabilizing the Dollar, a book that was written back in the 1920s. Popularized by John Maynard Keynes in the early 20th century, and Irving Fisher wrote an important book on the subject, The Money Illusion, in 1928. The existence of the money illusion is disputed by monetary economists who contend that people act rationally, that is to say, they think in real prices with regard to their wealth. All right? Some economists say, oh, people are doing things completely rational. This is rational when you treat that piece of paper that you have in your wallet as if it's money. It's, oh, yeah, this is rational. But others, economists, and they mention Elder Shafir, Peter A. Diamond, Amos Tversky, have provided empirical evidence for the existence of the effect. And it has been shown to affect the behavior of experimental and real-world situations. Schaefer et al. Also state that the money illusion influences economic behavior in three main ways. Price stickiness is number one. Money illusion has been proposed as one reason why nominal prices are slow to change, even where inflation has caused real price costs or costs to rise. Price stickiness. We stick with the nominal, we ignore the reality. Contracts and laws are not indexed to inflation as frequently as one would rationally expect. And incidentally, neither are taxes. We are looking at circumstances when we start to understand this money illusion, we can see the government acts rationally in relation to the money illusion, but the public does not. The government acts rationally in its own best interest when it causes 2% inflation. It is robbing its creditors. Right? It might not be acting morally, but it's acting rationally. Government is getting over when it can cause inflation. It's a rational act, for just in the same sense that it's rational for some people to rob banks. It's immoral, it's criminal, it's a bunch of things, but still you need money, you rob a bank. The government government is too irrational to notice or care about inflation. The only thing they care about is price. They don't care about purchasing power, and that's the money illusion. People only look at price, don't look at purchasing power. This argument, this insight, this concept, monetary, been recognized for a century, basically, right now. They haven't talked about it. Public isn't aware of it in any reasonable way. This is the first time I've heard about it. And I guarantee I would be much surprised if more than 1% of the American people had ever heard of the concept. Now, and it's probably less than that. 99% never heard of it. It's if you want to succeed, if you want to prosper, you have to learn to make investments based on increasing purchasing power, which is a more subtle but fundamental concept than merely nominal price. And you can't confuse the price of the house went up from $200,000 to $300,000. And we sit back and say, yay, I have an extra $100,000 because I bought that house. My equity in the house is now up an extra $100,000. Of course, inflation has reduced my actual income by 30%. All right? We don't look at that. I'm getting the same amount of money, but the purchasing power is down. What I'm groping here to try to get communicate is that this is a valid concept. And if you want to prosper, you have to learn to think in terms of what is the purchasing power of a particular investment, not its price. The price is not a significant, I won't say it's an insignificant factor, but it's not the controlling factor. If you want to prosper, you must invest in things whose purchasing power is going up, even if the price is going down. And what are the things and what's a good example of that? It's the gold we were talking about just yesterday, the day before. In the last year, price of gold has fallen now 15%. Value of the dollar is up 27% or 22%. Purchasing power of the dollar, at least as measured on the U.S. dollar index, up 22%. Implication, even though the price of gold is down, the nominal price is down. People say, I don't want any gold. The nominal price is down. I'm saying, wait a second. The purchasing power is up. It's not a bad investment. It's actually been doing well if you deal with reality. And that's what they're talking about here. They're saying, look, people just look at price, and that is irrational. They see the illusion. The price is the illusion. What's the purchasing power? And that's where you should be looking if you're going to make an investment. Money illusion can also influence people's perception of outcomes. Experience has shown that people generally perceived an approximate 2% cut in nominal income with no change in monetary value as unfair, but see a 2% rise in nominal income where there is 4% inflation as fair, despite being almost rational equivalents. Furthermore, money illusion means nominal changes in price can influence demand even if real prices have remained constant. The article continues. It's not lengthy. You can find it yourself. Again, money illusion. You can find it on Google it. And it turns out that it's not just a contrived argument. It's been around. Economists have recognized this for a long time. And, you know, it gives a certain amount of things that I wasn't aware of. I didn't know that the concept had been recognized in a meaningful way. And I was trying to figure it out for myself, and now you say, oh, wait a second, they've already done this. They understood this a century ago. I'm just now figuring it out, and I'm going to guarantee that 99.9% of the people in the audience are just now beginning to grasp this idea. If you want to prosper in this world, don't worry about the price, worry about the purchasing power. Right. Gold's purchasing power has increased in the last 12, 15 months. Price is down. Well, purchasing power is up.
The purchasing power of gold goes far back than just the last year and a half. You can take an ounce of gold, which is a perfect example of your money illusion. You can take an ounce of gold today, and it will buy you the same thing as it did 100 years ago.
Well, in some regards, it might even buy you more.
Well, I mean, but that's the prime example.
It'll buy you a good suit. It'll buy you a good suit in 1900. It'll buy you a good suit today.
Exactly.
All right?
That's longer than 100 years anymore.
The illusion is not in the gold. That is the reality. The illusion is in these pieces of paper we carry around in our wallet and we think of as money. And people only see price denominated in these pieces of paper. But the gold is hanging on to its value. It goes up. It varies. There's a certain amount of variation. But in terms of the dollar has lost 95% of its purchasing power since Nixon went off the gold standard in 1971. We don't even pay attention to it. A dollar today is worth a nickel when I was a kid. Right? Do we care? No. We just hang on to those $100 bills and we salivate like one of Pavlov's dogs. Ooh, a $100 bill. They are telling us from the perspective of economists, those of us who are salivating at the sight of a $100 bill are irrational. On the other hand, if those of us who salivate at the sight of a gold coin, they're actually responding to objective reality. They are rational people. And this is part of the problem you have sometimes, is communicating this idea. Because the implication are that those of us who embrace the modern monetary system, we're actually irrational. The ones who sit back and say, oh, paper dollars, debt-based monetary system, fiat currency, it's the modern way to go. You're irrational. Irrational in the sense of being crazy. The other people are sitting back and saying, no, wait a second, I think gold is the way to go. They're the ones that are rational. And most of the world is saying, you're crazy. Gold is nothing. All right? We need paper and digital dollars and paper dollars, and that's the formula for getting rich. The world is mad, Melody. You understand that? And this article on money illusion, it explains, to me at least, some of the frustration we can wind up feeling at times. You try to communicate what you think is right, you try to communicate what you think is true, and yet it falls on deaf ears. And the reason is because people have succumbed to this money illusion. They have become irrational. And as long as they remain irrational, it's going to be difficult to make them understand, wait, here's reality over here. You are living in a dream world. Got your paper money, your digital money, world.
One of the reasons it falls on deaf ears is because you have so many other financial planners and so forth they don't want people to understand. They fell in gold and gold paper. They fell away from the fundamental of gold. Yep. And that's what I've been trying to say. They don't focus. And I think it has damaged the gold and silver markets. Yep. I think that is why there's a huge lack of interest in gold and silver.
But at the same time created an opportunity.
Created their opportunity when people just got into the market, you know, after 2008, when it was easy. It was easy to sell gold and silver. And, they threw a lot of people into paper, gold and silver, without explaining the purchasing power of gold and how it protects it over a long period of time. And
we'll talk more about this in the future, Melody, because we be out of time. All right? But you folks can look this up yourself, the money illusion. Money illusion. Google it. See what you can learn about it. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We're out of here. Thanks for listening. Hope you tune in to us again tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.